go.
Planet to planet. And star to shining star from out of the night. And into the light. From out of the gloom.
You've got it.
And into the afternoon. From the pyramids of Bosnia and Giza.
Got it.
To the pyramids on Mars.
Now we see the Earth.
From Mercury to Pluto.
Now we see the Earth now.
From George Washington to Barack Obama. From science fiction to science fact, from conspiracy theory to conspiracy reality. From the bicameral fissure at the center of your mind to the living, pulsing throne of the mighty creator at the center of all time and all space. Your frequency is ascending. Revolution-radio.com, revolutiontalkradio.com, revolutionradio.tv. And freedomslips.com is tickled pink, pleased as punch, and busting its codpiece. It's so happy to present. Program that's the pinnacle of 16.4 billion years of evolution. Strange Universe, with your host. The man so nice, they named him a thrize.
You've got it, guys.
The man who always makes sure to put the potato in the front. You know, I'd have to tell you the whole joke. Anyway, it's I. How are you? It's, okay, once again, you guys like this. The girls think it's funny, so there you go. Yes, the man whose pinatas fight back, the man who's the only person to ace a Rorschach test. The man who every time he goes for a swim, dolphins and apparently jellyfish appear. The man the circus ran away to join, the man who once punched a man in the soul. The man who makes orange juice out of apples. The man who has proof that the Bermuda Triangle is actually a parallelogram. Man born in a log cabin he built with his own two hands. The man who jumped for joy and got it. The man Santa Claus sits on his lap. And the man was on the cover of his high school yearbook. It is I, Dr. Sean David Morton. You just have to call me the doctor from now on. So, sorry. When you call in, please. Doctor. Doctor this, doctor that. So there you go. That's it. There we go. And, of course, in its 51st year, back to your television sets with Peter Capaldi starring as the Doctor. The amazing, the stupendous, the incredible, the greatest show on television ever, ever, Doctor Who, returns tomorrow with the new Doctor. I'm going to miss Matt Smith, though. He was my favorite Doctor. All the girls like David Tennant, I know, because he's all handsome and spiky hairy and, nah. I dug Matt Smith in the chin, baby. So there it is. Once again, Doctor Who premieres. Also, it's going to be in movie theaters on Sunday. There's a few AMC movie theaters that are actually featuring Doctor Who. So if you want to just revel in your geekiness with a whole bunch of geeky, smelly people, I know I'm going on Sunday night. My grandmother actually knitted me Doctor Who's scarf in 1981. And again, I was working for public television, KCET, here in Los Angeles, when I talked him into actually carrying the show Doctor Who, which then brought Doctor Who to the United States. And we also had our first Doctor Who convention in 1981, where we brought Elizabeth Sladen, also known as Mary Jane, one of the companions of Tom Baker, who was the Doctor that I started watching in 1977 when it was on UHF, actually, here in the United States. But and also... worked for a while with a man by the name of Philip Siegel, who actually did the Doctor Who movie with Paul McGann, and we're trying to reboot it for an American version of the series. So I actually worked for a while on that, and actually Pierce Brosnan for a period of time was interested in actually playing the Doctor in a Doctor Who feature film. So I'm still looking to see who they're going to cast as the Master. There was talk about actually having Hugh Laurie play the Doctor, And, man, why he turned it down, that would have been so amazing.
Maybe because he's going to play the Master.
That's true. He might play the Master, so that
might
be
a damn good villain. Oh.
I think he'd be fantastic as the Master. He'd be so amazing as the Master. And, I don't know, who I'd like to see. I'd like to see either John Cleese. You know, they talked to a lot of people, actually. I know they just want to tell you that, oh, Peter Capaldi was all perfect, but they talked to Hugh Laurie was actually in contention for the Doctor for a brief period of time. Michael Palin, Mickey Palin from Monty Python was actually talked to for a while about being the Doctor. And I think he's a little too old, I think so. All right, we've got joining us from New Zealand. He is a researcher, a reporter, an investigator, a journalist, an all-around smashing chap, a wonderful fellow. He's got his own radio show called the syndicated, by the way, all around the world, called the Vinnie Eastwood Program. So I'd like to welcome my New Zealand counterpart and friend and pal and soulmate himself, Vinnie Eastwood. How are you doing, Vinnie?
Well, you know, somewhat fabulous is my standard response. Just quietly.
So here's my question for you. Coming from a peaceful nation, unlike America, I might add, what is the perspective of all of this chaos down in New Zealand, down under?
Well, since 1992, about 1,400 New Zealanders have been murdered by the New Zealand police in the line of duty, and not a single New Zealand police officer has lost their job or gone to jail.
Wow.
So, you know, we're all right with it. It's all good, bro.
Huh. Okay. So, all right. So you literally just have the cops to fear there.
Our cops are kind of like weird, in a way that you can't like bribe them on the street. They're not like openly corrupt. They're really corrupt though. But you don't really see it on the street. It's more like evidence being manufactured and doctored and playing word games with you and that sort of jazz. But up in the upper echelons, you know, it's just like everywhere else. There's massive involvement with law enforcement and crime, basically. Just like there's a involvement with the military-industrial complex and terrorism, you know. I mean, if you want to have longevity, you better make sure that you're able to control your competition. In some cases, fund them and make sure that they exist so that you continue to have legitimacy.
And so you have all these challenges, in a country that's – there's only – you guys have only 4 million people in the country.
Yeah,
and
4 million.
You're telling me police brutality is a – I mean, you can't have that many policemen. With only 4 million people in a country that's about the size of California, I think, or half the size of California anyway. But I'm looking for the global perspective. What's the – from again, a peaceful nation down under that's completely – that's obviously not threatened by any of this, that's not really involved in any of it. What's the attitude and the opinion? I mean, you were talking off air about this,
attitude is apathy and the opinion is non-existent. Next question.
Okay. Well, that was my one topic to talk about. Thanks, Vinny. Thanks.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we were talking about
that's exactly how it's working in New Zealand as well, because nobody actually cares, it seems like.
And we'd like to thank Vinny Eastwood for being our guest. Thank you, Vinny.
All right. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. I grow on you like a fungus. That's because I'm a fungi. And just like a fungi, I slip between the cracks. Good night, everyone.
There you go. So because we were talking about the supposedly beheaded James Foley not being James Foley. It's just not the same person. And that beheading was just so amazingly fake that it boggles the imagination how stupid it is. And again – they're trying to tell you that the laws of physics don't act the same way in the 21st century, apparently, as they did in the 20th century. And
oh, yeah, because we know more about stuff, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they again try to tell you that that in essence they never show you things on the TV because they don't want you to analyze what it is because oh it's too graphic and it's too this and it's too that. So it's you know, it's just wild. We've got rioting in the streets here, you know, over police brutality, which is something that you all have to deal with in. You have to deal with New Zealand quite a bit.
Again, that's not like in public. It's not like during riots and shootings and publicly available things. It's more like you get pulled over for a traffic ticket and you're kind of lippy to the cop, and then you just basically get beaten by about four cops in your cell, and you die. and they say, oh, he must have had a heart attack or something like that, or other prisoners must have done it. What, we've got four cops to testify. What are you going to do? Who's there to testify against us? The guy who's dead? And the only complaints that you can put against the New Zealand police are to the Police Complaints Authority, which I found out is staffed entirely by current members of the New Zealand police. So let me get this straight, bro. It's kind of like if you go to Wall Street and you go, hey, bro, are you Wall Street guys doing any corrupt business here? And they're like, no, we're not. And they go, well, who regulates you? Who's your authority? Who verifies whether or not you're doing criminal activity? And they go, well, we do. And this exact same thing happens in the States, man. Every time you go reporting police brutality, guess who starts to become the suspect? You, the person reporting. Can you give us your name? Can you give us your date of birth? Can you tell us exactly what happened so we can help you get your complaint out there and all of that kind of thing? This is code word for, hey, we've now got your number, buddy. You don't want to keep complaining about us because we're actually the biggest criminal gang in this country. Uh-huh. And at the end of the day, doesn't matter what you do, doesn't matter what the media reports or anything like that, they won't compromise the integrity of the police by saying they're all corrupt, will they? Even if they are all corrupt, because then people's faith in the law will become shaken and they'll apparently become lawless. I think that the opposite and correct reaction to that is actually you realize that we have to take personal responsibility for the application of the law and justice in our daily lives. And in so doing, it'll keep the scumbaggery at bay.
Meanwhile, here in California, it's a little strange because there's no room for beach towels here. And I went out and took a look at this today. Is it weird that Australia doesn't have any? Now, I know Australia has no guns, but do you have any guns in New Zealand?
And first of all, Australia has a lot of guns. So does New Zealand.
Right.
However, they're not like freely available. We've got like Turkey, just before they slaughtered all the Armenians, we got very fierce gun registration and gun proprietorship and laws and stuff we can go around. Like, for example, in New Zealand, if you want a proper weapon, you need to have a safe that can fit it in. So it's a big safe you got to get for a rifle. And also it has to be bolted to the wall and floor. How many people who are renting will be able to get that permission from their landlord? And if you go out hunting and you have to stop into a gas station to get a bag of chips or a coffee or something like that, or fill your car up with gas, if you get out of the car and you're not in possession of your rifle, you're breaking the law because you don't have a reason to be there with a rifle. You don't have a reason to be at a gas station with a rifle, mate. You do have a reason if you're on the way to go hunting or anything like that, but you can't stop off along the way. It's insane.
Is that right? New Zealand or Australia?
That's New Zealand.
And it's very interesting what you just mentioned about the slaughter of the Armenians by the Turks, because it does seem that gun registration and gun confiscation always precedes mass acts of genocide. I wonder if that's just a coincidence.
It's kind of like in the movie The Chronicles of Riddick. I'm not sure if you've seen it, but
yes, of course, yes, I have.
Yeah, it is said the comet always precedes them, these world enders. And I'm going to just revamp that. It is said that the gun registration and gun ban always precede them, these life enders.
Yeah, and tell that to the people in Gaza Strip. Tell that to the people in Poland before the Nazis rolled in.
Yeah. How many people in Gaza have gun rights? Are they able to own firearms, like in Iraq, where everybody's allowed to own an AK-47 per household?
Yeah. No, of course not.
I mean, do you have any idea how difficult it would be to keep public order in Iraq if everybody wasn't packed armed to the teeth?
Well, I'm sure you probably saw the videos before Saddam Hussein was deposed, and either maybe he was hung. Again, that to me looked completely fake. But he would give speeches to crowds of people, and they would shoot their guns in the air while he was giving the speech. Try that here in America. He could walk down the street anywhere in Iraq and not be worried with people running around with guns shooting him in the air. And, I mean, you know, we can't do that. We certainly can't do that with our president here. Yeah. So
now, what does that say about America if in a lot of ways the dictators that American government pays like $1 billion a day or some stuff like that to stay in the government or stay in the countries and occupy them and whatnot? If you're spending that much time doing that and that much money doing that, and you don't even have the freedoms that they had before you took out their dictator.
Right, that's a little weird.
I mean, what are you doing, bro? What are you going to do? Give them the Constitution because you're not using it anymore?
Yeah, indeed. Here in California, we've had a weird, weird thing happen. We've had these creatures that call – they're called by-the-wind sailors, and they're all stranded on U.S. beaches, and the animals have – perplexed biologists, as little is known about their lives. They are similar in nature to jellyfish, and they do feed by stunning their prey, but they're not really harmful to human beings. But, you know, stranger things happen at sea, and stranger things are happening on the beaches as well. Billions of these mysterious creatures have now been washed up on beaches along the west coast of the U.S. from Southern California to British Columbia. Needless to say, the locals have been extremely curious. They're here in Hermosa Beach. And millions of these creatures, which ride wind and currents, are washed up in La Push, creating a virtual carpet of them on the beach. The jellies are also called Vela Velas, and they're washing up on the Pacific coast, all the way from British Columbia, as I said, to SoCal, down in San Pedro. They're actually coming up, they're coming down, actually, from British Columbia. But the jellyfish-like creatures each measure around 7 to 10 centimeters and are bright blue and distinguished by a gas-filled float that rises above the surface of the water, which is another reason why they call them by-the-wind sailors, because they're pushed by the wind. But they have a fin-like structure.
Like a blue bottle jellyfish to me. Equivalent, yeah.
They have a fin-like structure, which means that their direction of travel depends entirely on the winds and the currents. Now, the number of Vela Velas that have washed up on the North American beaches is staggering, with possibly billions, I mean, not only stranded, but now dead. So Kevin Raskoff, professor of biology at Monterey Peninsula College, where, of course, they have the famed Monterey Aquarium, he says the numbers, if you extrapolate, are awe-inspiring. With some of my students, we counted more than 1,000 per meter, and the numbers get astronomical pretty fast. Yeah. Experts find the creatures perplexing, as little is known about their true nature. The creatures are similar to jellyfish, as they sting to stun their prey, though they're not capable of causing humans really much pain and have a similar structure. They're sustained by feeding on animal plankton and drift around in huge flotillas, which can contain millions of the individuals. So travel guide Michael Ellis, writing in Bay Nature, said, even though Vela Velas are very common and distributed throughout the oceans of the world, very little is known about the details of their lives. The reproductive polyps apparently bud off some small medusae, miniature jellyfish-like structures, somewhere in the middle of the ocean. And the medusae sink to depths of over 7,000 feet and grow gonads, which then produce sperm or eggs. And fertilization occurs in the dark abyss. The small young develop a float, secrete gas into it, and rise slowly.
Hold on a second. I like that coupling there. Gonads and the dark abyss together. Continue.
Slowly, thousands of feet to the surface. Here they glide along, feeding on animal plankton that they sting with specialized cells located in the tentacles called nematocysts. Now, their stranding is thought to coincide with the warming of coastal waters, and it's sad to see any kind of creature, you know, die like this. And you know, it's all along our beaches. Now, there is kind of a weird storm,
and that's a lot of Vela Velas, fellas.
Yes, a lot of Vela Velas. Now, it's not just that we have weird jellyfish in the ocean, but because I have Vinny here, and we're just talking about weird stuff, as he's.
Well, I thought we had weird jellyfish in Congress.
You do so, yes. Well, in your Congress in New Zealand, where they're beaten by the police, or in our Congress in the United States?
I think a little bit of column A and a little bit of column B.
Okay. Astronauts find living organisms clinging to the International Space Station, and they aren't sure how they got there. Now,
I thought they were called the Russians.
Yeah. Now, knowing and growing up with astronauts when I was a kid, they talked about what sometimes they called sky paramecium. That there were living creatures actually in the upper atmosphere. Now, it's also interesting that in the UFO adventures of famed UFO contactee George Adamski, who wrote best-selling books, by the way, on his contacts with supposedly Venusians, Martians, Saturnians, Jovians, these kind of blonde-haired, blue-eyed beings who were actually stretched throughout the solar system. It's also interesting, too, that as ufology has progressed, that our contacts with extraterrestrials seem to get further and further away by the time. First it was Venus, then it was Mars, then it was Jupiter, then it was Saturn, then it was the Pleiades, and then it was Andromeda, the constellation, then it was Andromeda, the next galaxy over. So they seem to just be getting further away, the more we get into them. But one of the things that George Adamski described in his first spaceflight was that there was a bizarre swarm of what he called fireflies around the saucer that was being piloted by a being from Venus called Orthon, actually was his name. There's Orthon and Furcon, who were the two fellows that he was talking to. And this was then noticed, and if you ever saw the movie The Right Stuff, that was memorialized in that film. But when John Glenn and actually Alan Shepard, people forget Alan Shepard was really the first man, the first American into space. And John Glenn orbited the Earth, and he said the same thing that George Adamski did in 1952. John Glenn said that there were these weird fireflies, these little gadgets, he called them, all around the spacecraft. All right, I got my buddy Vinny Eastwood joining us here from New Zealand. Rock on tour and talk show host from down there, and we're going to talk about more stuff. Gods and angels look down from on high and wonder at this strange universe, and we'll be back. And welcome back to Strange Universe. There we go. Once again, Doctor Who premieres tomorrow with new Dr. Peter Capaldi. Very exciting. Actually, the last airing of Doctor Who, which I think was the Christmas episode, or actually the Doctors with John Hurt and David Tennant, broke a new record actually for something like 100 million people all viewing the. It was the largest simultaneously seen event, I guess ever on television. 100 million plus people actually all
even
over
more
the world,
than 9/11.
Not just in the United States. Pardon me.
Even more people than 9/11.
I don't know about that, but it's anyway. Okay, I guess we got Brian if he wants to come on in. Hey, Brian, you gonna call and drive by us and then hang up? What's the deal?
I hung up on him because he all of a sudden started running his mouth and whatnot. Are we allowing him on?
Well, that's what Brian does. I know he upsets you. I find him amusing, but it's
I thought he was gonna be a disturbance for your show. I don't care. It's your show. You want?
It's okay, Vinny. You're willing to take a wild ride here. It's, you know, if Brian wants to call back, we'll put you on, Brian.
Dude, I'm from New Zealand.
I know he's got some sort of vendetta in mind. Although, once again, I have never hung up on Brian. I've let him talk. I've let him have his peace. I have other people that say, Brian, put down the crack pipe and back away.
Yeah.
Because Brian thinks and operates at a speed that most of us humans don't go by. Yes?
Look at it this way. I'm from New Zealand and we talk really, really quickly anyway. And if anything goes wrong, I'm about 10,000 Ks away and you probably can't be bothered getting a passport and coming over here and spending the $1,400 in order to do so. All right. So let's do it.
All right. You're going to have a talk off at 20 paces. So, backs to backs, gentlemen, please choose your weapon of locution. All right. During a spacewalk intended to clean the International Space Station, Russian astronauts took samples from the exterior of the station for a routine analysis, and the results of the experiment were quite surprising. Astronauts expected to find nothing more than contaminants created by the engines of incoming and outgoing spacecraft, but instead found that living organisms were clinging to the outside of the ISS. The astronauts identified the organisms as sea plankton that likely originated from Earth, but the team couldn't find a concrete explanation as to how these organisms made it all the way up to the space station or how they managed to survive in space.
I guarantee you, one of the astronauts' kids gave him some sea monkeys before he went up.
Now, these little creatures actually are called, I'm not kidding, you know, we were joking about the TARDIS, the Doctor Who travels around in a TARDIS, which stands for Time and Relative Dimensions in Space. And the TARDIS had a chameleon circuit, so when the Doctor – it actually looks like a big tube. When the Doctor first came to Earth, it disguised itself as a police call box in 1963. And supposedly the chameleon circuit stuck, and it became one of the most iconic symbols in all science fiction. But so these creatures, which look like – I don't know they look like little rhinoceroses with kind of a – with sort of a funnel nose. They look like something a Dr. Seuss would make up. But there's a colorized scanning electron micrograph, and they are actually called tardigrades, T-A-R-D-I, grades, and they look amazing. And though NASA has so far been unable to confirm whether or not the Russians truly did discover sea plankton clinging to the exterior of the station, there is some precedent for certain creatures being able to survive the vacuum of space. All right, do we have a caller now?
Yes, we have a different caller, 562.
Okay. All right, 562, who dat and where you at?
Hey, this is Kevin, California.
Hey, Kevin, how you doing, brother? What's on your mind?
Hey, I wanted to ask Vinny what he resolved with CIA Centelli. Did he ever did he ever file a lawsuit for stealing his guerrilla media?
Well, we tried to. We had a former.
First off, you're gonna have to fill us in on the story, Vinny, before you give us the explanation. What happened?
Okay, long story short, Pete Santilli had Jim Fetzer on his program, and then it was the worst interview ever. He got fired off American Freedom Radio, and then a couple of days later, you know, we had this conversation about starting up a new guerrilla media thing, and I told him the idea, the name, the structure of the company, and the website things, and how to run the whole operation and everything. And then the very next day, after getting fired off of American Freedom Radio, he stops talking to me and then starts up GuerrillaMediaNetwork.com. And then totally cuts me out. And we get this kind of fight going between us. And he starts threatening Anonymous. And then Anonymous hacked his computer. And you wouldn't believe what they found. A fax he sent to the FBI asking for help, because he was really concerned about the fact that myself and Suzanne Posel were exposing the fact that he's a criminal, lying, sociopathic, stealing scumbag.
Right.
And every single person... whoever comes into contact with him or gets into business with him or anything like that gets co-opted, abused, or ripped off, or something of that nature. So,
didn't he hack your computer too?
No. I've got a
Mac. He hacked Suzanne Posel's computer, right?
He went in there and put it on her
computer or something like that.
I'm sorry, he had a paid hacker that was working in some bong shop and on the strip in California somewhere. I don't know, in LA, but. They took down her website for nearly 3 months, and they started up a whole bunch of other websites in her name. They really went after her. They didn't come after me so much. They really went after Suzanne Posel. I mean, they published her home address, where her children live, and everything like that, a picture of her kids.
You weren't able to sue them, though? Or,
pardon?
You weren't able to get any kind of...
I don't know how to do legal stuff, and whenever you go up against Santilli, the thing is with psychopaths, if you go up against them or you do anything, they come back at you 10 times as hard as anything you can do, because I've got morals, I've got rules, I've got ethics. There's certain things I won't do, like I won't publish details about his children or something like that, or I won't threaten to rape him, or I won't accuse him of being a pedophile or something like that, as he's done to myself and many others that have tried to expose him. So,
right.
You know, don't talk about Santilli unless you're really willing to take the heat that it'll take, because he's got a big troll army. I don't want to talk about it actually. I'm getting emotional.
Sorry, but
stuff just kind of comes back up.
The FBI,
it's really
he's
nasty.
A lot of pull. Hey, Sean, I wanted to say something about the ISIS.
Yes.
Hey, what do you think? Okay, now first on the news, they were talking about. We need to go back in. We need to go into Syria and take them out, because otherwise we're not going to get ISIS. And now they're talking about going in and helping Assad get ISIS. So what's going on here? Do you have any idea?
Wow. So that's
talking
exactly
about going in and taking out Assad to get to ISIS. And now they're saying they're going to go help Assad to get to ISIS.
So in other words, they're going to accomplish all the goals they tried to accomplish by supposedly pinning the sarin gas attack on Assad when they found out that it wasn't him. So now by having this free-range, free-roaming group of terrorists with all of these fake YouTube videos coming out of fake beheadings and fake mass executions, because I'm telling you, kids, they're fake. They're just all fake.
I saw a video that another guy was saying that he thought it was fake too.
Completely. They're completely fake. And not only is it fake, but the beheading of James Foley, who did disappear, I think, in 2012, it's not him. It's just even if they cut this guy's head off, it's not James Foley. It's not an American citizen. It ain't him.
So the way they're getting around it being the way they're getting around people saying it is him is because his parents supposedly identified him.
Well then, gee, because we've never had parents lie, you know, as crisis actors, if you will.
But I know, saying, but you see him. There's a video of him. So he shows them they're giving like a press conference, and they don't seem too upset.
That struck me as very strange when you look at the still photographs of the guy that they actually chop his head off, and you show then James Foley right next to him, and it is so obviously a different person. So how do you explain the evidence of your own eyes with people who are quite possibly paid to lie? And again, there were people out of the Boston bombing who lied their asses off about this stuff. There, you know, once again, crisis actors. There were, and don't get me wrong, there were children that were killed at Sandy Hook, but there was there's a lot of very, very queer things going on in regards to the aftermath of that as well. So we've had a series of terrorist actions that all don't seem to make any sense. And if you're building up ISIS as being these, and here's what I compare it against. I mean, the money that we spent on the military industrial complex over the course of the last 60 plus years, let's call it 55 plus years, against the Soviet Union and against the communist Chinese. Now we're trying to tell you, and these were entire nations with armies and weapons and tanks and nuclear warheads and supposedly mutually assured destruction. And we're in this arms race with them so that we could get a better missile than them. And, you know, it never really made any sense to me since we never actually engaged anybody. It's just one of those Amini R7 Star Trek mythical wars where you've got to step into the vaporizer because, oh, the computer took out your city. So now we're being told that this ragtag band of maybe 3,000 guys that we now have to spend the same amount of money that we spent. Again, let's put Al Qaeda and ISIS and all these towel-headed weirdos together. And we're talking about a grand total of maybe 5,000 people who on their worst day can maybe kill, I don't know, blow up a plane or something. You know, I mean, on their worst day, they could probably kill maybe 500, maybe 1,000 people. And now we're being talked into spending the same amount of money that we spent to defend ourselves against mutually assured destruction on these yabos who, as far as I can see, have yet to have actually attacked the United States.
Or
U.S. citizens, unless you believe James Foley.
It's military equipment, isn't it?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
It's kind of funny that they end up with all this nice military equipment to do all this. They just took over an oil field. I mean, it's like, they just took over a ballistic missile. Yeah. It's like, really? You know, I mean, course, come on.
Of course, here's the challenge.
You know, your take on Ferguson, I think you're spot on. I was listening to you the other day, and I think you pretty much hit the nail on the head on that one.
Well, thank you. And again, once again, this was, you know, I don't know what to say. Just it's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, man. It's just the savages are just taking over. And again, I think also what they're doing is that there was an incident, and I think that the police violence just poked the monkey or bear, or please pick a non-racist animal to poke that gets mad when you poke it. And people went crazy when I've seen these things happen, and I've never seen one of these things escalate without the police actually attacking a crowd.
Right.
I saw the Venice Beach riot, which was so the cops just attacking people on the beach that were just minding their own business. I've seen Hermosa Beach as an example. I've seen one year where things got bad because the police did attack people, and I saw the very next year when the police were cool and everybody was fine. And there was actually a policeman on a motorcycle that was towing a whole line of people that were on roller skates. But, you know, that's just because we've got this strand out there, and, you know, we've got kind of a great beach environment here. But, and again, as far as the ISIS thing goes, I don't know how to weigh in on this other than we're just, you know, we've spent trillions of dollars in this part of the world. I know it's always been about keeping Iraqi oil off the world market. We took out Saddam because he wanted to trade oil in gold-backed dinars and
right.
Say, why do we have to rely on the United States? And the United States comes in and says, because we control the oceans, and if you expect to get anything from point A to point B in a boat, then
your
better,
access will be denied.
Yeah, access denied. Then you better be trading in dollars. Otherwise, your boat's not going to get to where it goes. That's why there's so much interest in putting pipelines together from Syria into France, and then from Ukraine to all parts in Europe, primarily to compete with the Russians. And again, if I was Vladimir Putin, I would just say, you know, okay, I will sell oil at 50% off if you pay for it in rubles or gold. And he could collapse the market tomorrow if he wanted to. And we've known for quite some time that Putin has placed himself And I'm not saying he's a great guy. You know, all these crazy world leaders are, you know, just to be one of these guys, you've got to be a bit of a Machiavellian, you know, scumbag. But, you know, you never want to give power to the people that want it. And what I've seen so far of Putin is he has put himself very firmly against a U.S.-based New World Order. And he paid off all of his country's debts, showed up at David Rockefeller's house outside of St. Petersburg, his DACA, basically with a warrant to kick him out of the country. Because it was David Rockefeller that was the executor for the corporate bankruptcy of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, which was
Putin was doing like a leave Chile kind of moment.
Exactly. And he paid off the IMF and he paid off the World Bank, both of which he has called the mafia and criminal organizations that spread war, disaster, and misery wherever they go.
Did he tell the Rockefellers, by the way, in Russia, you only get out what you put in?
That's funny. And he's pulled back nuclear missiles from the borders. And the minute he's pulled back his weaponry, George Bush back in the day rushed in and put missiles on the border, pointing them all at Russia. Putin was the one that said Bush is like a man running around the world slicing people with a razor. He also made a comment that – and he has done this actually. He has made overtures of peace every single time. Where he said, ever since Gandhi died, I have no one to talk to, which I think is just a funny joke on his part. But he really is right. And now that they're backing the BRICS nations, you're talking about a 190 nation confederation that is diametrically opposed to American imperialism. Now add to that a president that we have I have no other way to put it. He's an enemy of the United States. He hates our guts. He hates our guts.
Well, he's probably working with.
Well, hold on. Can I ask a question, clarification? When was the last time there wasn't a president of the United States who wasn't an enemy of the state?
There again?
Last time that there was a president of the United States who wasn't, you know, in retrospect, kind of an enemy of the state?
That's the worst.
He couldn't be any more of an enemy.
Well, that's kind of.
I don't know if it's like who's the worst enemy or it's just like. I find, being from New Zealand, our head of state kind of has dictatorial kind of powers and stuff, and I see the NDAA and all other forms of legislation being passed in the United States that gives the president dictatorial powers as well. So it occurs to me that basically once you get elected to rule over a country, more or less, and it's too late. There's really not a whole lot of good you can do with your term because it's predetermined, isn't it?
Well, yeah, he is a puppet, that's for sure. But I think he could actually challenge it, don't you?
I don't know. Who gave you the $500 million worth of campaign contributions to pay for all the airtime that got you elected?
Thanks.
And will all those people just give it to you out of the goodness of their hearts and expect no kickbacks?
Well, that was actually the primary contributor to Obama's campaign was George Soros, who wrote him a check for $80+ million. To basically make him president of the United States. But it's you just have to look at – if you look at the scope of presidents in the U.S. To answer your question, they have done – we have had presidents that have done good things for the people and things against the people. And the only two presidents that I've been able to look at this century or in the last 100 years or so that as far as I can see have done nothing for the people whatsoever. I mean nothing. And have been at war with the people have been George W. Bush. And even he did one. Well, I can't say that. You know, when he came in, we had a huge surplus under Clinton because Clinton balanced the federal budget in February of 98, which is another reason why they wanted to impeach him by August of 98, because Richard Nixon balanced the federal budget as well in February of 74. And by August, he was resigning. But when Bush first came in, he gave away the surplus. He gave everybody $350 checks. Out of the surplus, but that then put us in debt back to the bankers once again. And then from that point on, I think from about 2003 or so, I have never seen a president like Bush that didn't do a single thing that was of benefit to the American people. And, you know, Clinton had a few bright spots and a few dark spots. You could go back to, obviously go back to Reagan, who I think did a lot for the United States and for America, but, you know, going down Lyndon Johnson, I think was a terrible president, Clinton. But he passed the Civil Rights Act and all that. Yes.
Yeah. But don't forget, Clinton gave our Long Beach port to the Chinese. Remember?
He kind of did.
And he did more coke than the entirety of Colombia.
This is true, but it's, and what he's done down in Long Beach is which is actually the port of Los Angeles. There's a thin strip that runs along the 110 freeway that goes across the Vincent Thomas Bridge that is actually still Los Angeles, believe it or not. And because LA just reached out this tentacle to make sure that they took the port, before giving anything to Long Beach. But yeah, they basically handed all the contracts over to Costco, which is the China, ocean shipping company. And,
right.
But the Chinese, the Chinese have lots of ships. And by the way, they've taken over the Panama Canal. Whampoa now is on each side of that. But the United States is now talking about building another canal, a super canal through Nicaragua. So, you know, the bottom line is the Chinese are expanding and are industrious, and we're not, because most of our investment capital has been going over to China. I actually think
it's because all of the wealth creation has been outsourced to China. You know, wealth creation is either extraction of natural resources or assembly of the such and the processing of the such. But the American economy has been turned totally digital or into the service industry, or basically you're making nothing and you're extracting nothing. And what do you think's going to happen when there's no actual
wealth?
I'm going
to get off.
I've
got another guy call for you.
All right, buddy. Thanks.
Good talking to you, man. Bye.
All right. I think we're wrapping him up here.
Isn't that what's going to happen? It's the exact same thing that's happening to every country in the Western world, isn't it? Outsource, extract the wealth. All right, we're not creating wealth anymore because it's being extracted from us.
Huh?
They want to subjugate us, right? And the best way to conquer a country is economically. Because it's far more difficult for people to realize that they're being conquered, and the scars last longer.
Well, we want to kind of wrap things up on kind of a positive note. It was a good week for believing, after a Russian fisherman being mauled by a brown bear escaped death when the Justin Bieber song Baby Baby started playing on his phone, causing the beast to flee in terror. I know that sort of ringtone isn't to everyone's taste, said Igor Vorostovsnakafashovich, 42. It's a good year for millennials. After Merriam-Webster's official Scrabble Player's Dictionary, which hasn't been updated in decades, now added 5,000 new words that can be played on a Scrabble board, including selfie, bromax, bromance, and chillax, dude. Good week for gratitude after a diner in North Carolina began offering a 15% discount to anyone who prays or takes a moment to meditate before eating a meal. Being grateful opens the heart chakra, said restaurant owner Mary Haglund.
They've found that if you bless food before you eat it, apparently it opens it up a lot better in your body and you digest more nutritional value from it.
There you go. Saying your prayers, saying grace before dinner is a good idea. Grandma knew what she was talking about. Only in America, an 18-year-old man triggered panicky 9/11 calls when he carried a shotgun through the streets of Aurora, Colorado, saying that he wanted to make residents feel more comfortable about guns. Of course, Aurora is the town where a crazed gunman killed 12 and wounded 70 in 2012. If enough people were to lawfully open carry, said Steve Lohner. Lohner, it's really his name. People would end up feeling comfortable around it.
You can't make this stuff up.
You can't curse on the air. It's not New Zealand where we swear all the time. A woman's power... Oh, there we got is that the music?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. Always, I want to thank ladies and gentlemen for being here with me. Thank you, Vinny. I don't know if we have time for anything. All is one, life has purpose, God is love. I am.
Can I plug my website? TheVinnyEastwoodShow.com. Listen to that, ladies and gentlemen.
There we go. Thanks for joining us. Thanks all week. And the most valuable thing that the universe gives us is a friend. And thank you so much for being mine. We'll see you next week, strangers. What doesn't kill us makes us stranger. Strange, but not a stranger. We'll see you on Monday. Thank you.